spend my dollar.
It's not about what you want. It's about what you're willing to do to get it. Run it again.
Hello and welcome.
I'm not going to, so quit asking.
When you give me a hard time.
For the listeners that didn't get to go.
This is the payback.
Alabama wins!
What you did last year really doesn't matter.
Our goal is to have the kind of team that nobody wants to play.
All right.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. And man, it has been way too long since I've said that with meaning, right? We are jumping into the 2021 football season. That just even sounds weird to say, right? But we are. And what we're going to do is we're going to do a sort of a three-show series. And we're going to emphasize these being pre-camp shows. So these are primers. These are getting our heads on straight, remembering the names, remembering the team and the positions and sort of all the stuff, sort of scraping off the dust from last season. And so we're going to do three shows coming up. We're going to do coaching changes, and we're going to do that now. And we're going to step through a handful of coaching changes. We're going to do a separate show. We're going to record it today, record all these today, and then sort of release them over time. And so we're going to do the coaches show. We're going to do an offense sort of position breakdown or position overview. And then we're going to do the same for defense. And then we'll throw in a couple comments on special teams as well. Like I said, on the website, we're going to release these as individual articles. And there'll actually be four articles on the website. And so there'll be things that we cover in the audio here that we don't have in the write-up. And there'll be things that we talk about in the write-up that we may not necessarily get to here in the audio. So they're good companion pieces. And, you know, I would encourage you to check them out. We like traffic on the website, such as it is. But definitely, and obviously you listen to this, so that's good. So a couple sort of administrivia things that we want to break off as well. You may have already heard that we have joined a podcast network. And so we're part of Minute Media now. And so you would hear that by virtue of there being a pretty slick ad pasted onto this. And so what that's going to do, what we hope Minute Media does, and they're sort of the podcast arm of the fan-sided media sort of network, whatever it is. And what we hope to benefit with these guys is a greater distribution, which helps grow the show, which, you know, hopefully is good for everyone. We hope that it's going to help us connect with other podcasts that maybe do shows for our opponents. So it'll be easier for us to do interview shows with future opponents. Now, last year we did some interview shows. Most of those we released under sort of the member network. We're going to release all of those public this year. And we didn't do all games last year. And this year we're hoping to do all games. And damn, that's a booger to find a podcast for opponent shows. You wouldn't think it would be, but give it a shot. But at any rate, we hopefully the network will help us in that regard. And we also are releasing or updating the member support program. And so we're going to bring that back. And historically, the last 2 years we've done that, it's been the 2019 program, and then it was the 2020 program. What we're going to do is we're going to put out there sort of a reoccurring program. So you're not buying for a particular season. You jump in and jump out as you wish. And so there's a version that's monthly, and it's $2 a month. And there's a version that is annual, and that's $18 annually. And so if you sign up annually, you basically get, you know, a couple of the slow season summer months for free. And so when you sign up on the website, alabamafootballpodcast.com, it'll automatically take care of all of that stuff. You will get a link to the private show. We're going to continue to do a private show. What we're going to do is have ad-free versions of this content released over there. And then we'll continue to do the Zoom shows. So if you're a member, you'll get access to the Zooms, and then you'll get access through the private show release. You'll get access to the Zoom recordings as well. Last year, for every game, I did sort of a post-game sort of wrap-up. And so probably do some version of that most weeks, and we would release that only on the private feature as well. Here's what's really, really cool. And I'm not necessarily telling you to do this, but this is what would be really, really cool is you have the opportunity. I think we have like 70 bonus shows out there that haven't been released to the public. And so like, if you really want to binge the show, sign up for $2, download all that stuff, and then cancel the membership. I mean, we don't want you to do that, but we really want to front load the value sort of proposition here. So give it a shot for a couple of bucks, and hey, do it for $2, download everything. If you like it, come back and get it annually, and we'll go from there. So I think that's the administrative stuff that we wanted to cover. And what we want to do now in this show is we're just going to jump into the coaching changes. There were a number of coaching changes. And if you'll remember going into the 2020 season, we made a big deal out of how few coaching changes there were. Now, COVID had a lot to do with that. But it was the first time since 2014, 2015 that we had both coordinators come back for the subsequent season. We had a couple of positional changes, but sort of the leadership at the top end of the staff there, there was no turnover and stability. And so what we saw this year is obviously we lost offensive coordinator, and Sark took a lot of guys with him. And then we had some guys sort of leave on their own in other directions as well. So we've had more turnover on this coaching staff than maybe we have had in two or three seasons. And so, and it's not unusual. People come and get Saban coaches. They want a little bit of the pixie dust and magic, and somehow that stuff doesn't travel very well outside the city limits when other people try to take it with them. But nonetheless, a lot of changes. And so I just want to step through, give a little bit of commentary. I'm not going to pretend that that I'm the expert on any of this, but this is just an opinion piece around some of the coaches and some of the changes. I do think, now, I liked all the guys that we had, and we have had instances where we've changed coaches and maybe I didn't like who we brought in, or maybe that felt like a significant step down. And I don't feel that way about any of these coaches. I think there's a couple of themes that sort of run through this set of hires that really demonstrate Saban being on the ball. He's not as a CEO administrative coach that is losing his fastball. And these hires, these coaching hires, especially as I start to really look at them and preparing to talk with you guys, I think, holy hell, there's a lot to really, really like here. And so I'm not going to break all of it apart, but I'm going to hit some of the highlights of what I especially like about each of these individual guys. This doesn't categorically mean I didn't like the other guy. It doesn't mean that at all. It just means this is what we've got. And so let's talk about what we've got, not what we don't. And so let's jump in. And I think some of this will sort of play itself out. I think, so let's start at the top. Bill O'Brien replacing Steve Sarkisian. Now, we really like Sark, right? And he went to Texas, and which is great for him. He took a lot of guys with him and tried to take more than he got. And so that kind of left us with a little bit of a parting shot that we didn't necessarily enjoy. But let's all admit, we really like Sark. He had sort of an up and down time at Alabama. He came, called one game and left to go to the Falcons, and then came back, and so we weren't sure about that. And then he just can we just say he absolutely sort of kicked ass as an offensive coordinator last year. And even across the fan base, there was some discussion of, oh man, if Saban steps down, we this is the guy we want. And it turns out that that Sark went ahead and left. Now, I think that signifies a couple of things that are really positive. And we'll talk about Bill O'Brien too, which I think there's a lot of positive there as well. But the fact that Sark left, sort of, there's two messages baked within that are both incredibly positive. One, it says the Saban sort of coaching pipeline is alive and well, because it wasn't that many years ago that Sark was toxic, and now he's the head coach at Texas. Now, say what we want to, like Texas, don't like Texas, but damn it, that's a blue blood program. They're down on the luck, all the things that you could say, but you can't say that Texas isn't a top flight, a top tier program. They're not a blue blood. And look, I'm not trying to pump them up. Let's just acknowledge, holy hell, he went from toxic to Texas. That's pretty damn impressive. And that's what the Saban pipeline and sort of the wash, rinse, repeat, bring in another coach. It is alive and well, right? That demonstrates that that's alive and well. If there were coaches in line that say, And this may be why the guys we were able to bring in, that Saban was able to bring in, why there's so much meat on this bone, because they said, holy hell, I can go to Alabama. And look what they churn out. They churn out blue blood head coaches. And so so just amazing that that's the case. Another thing, and this is maybe, I don't know which of these is more subtle than the other, but another thing that resonates with me is for the conversation that Sark would take over for Saban, and it's all sort of media driven, but I think there's some reality, potential reality to it. And had Saban, if it were in his mind to retire after this next season or maybe two more seasons, then I think that's a conversation that he and Sark had. Hey, I can go to Texas, or hey, what is the thought process here? And so I think that's a candid conversation you have. And I think their relationship would allow it. And I think Sark got an answer that said, well, I'm not going to wait that long. And so from an Alabama fan perspective, the pipeline is alive and well, and it looks like Saban's not going anywhere, which is, those would be two answers that we would want. So let's definitely take that as a positive. Wish Sark well and go from there. Now let's talk about Bill O'Brien. Bill O'Brien, the name cachet maybe had taken a little bit of a hit during his time at Texas, and as the Texans head coach, so NFL head coach, right? And a really good coach. And when he was just the coach, they went to the playoffs. Where he struggled and where maybe his name sort of got dinged a little bit is when he was the general manager as well. And so let's think about that a little bit. Oh, wow. He's the head coach and general manager. Now, there's only a handful of people alive that can juggle those two jobs. And there's only been a handful that have ever actually, done it with even a little bit of success. And, I would put, Bill O'Brien either on the list or next to the list. But his career, even if you discount a little bit of some of the GM stuff with the Texans, his career is no slouch. Offensive coordinator for the Patriots. Hey, remember, it wasn't that long ago, we had some pretty good success with a tight end coach from the Patriots, right? And so the full-on offensive coordinator, hey, that's a pretty good deal. And of course, he's definitely connected to Tom Brady. And so that that has some resonance, I think, within recruiting. He was the head coach at Penn State at probably the worst possible time ever to be head coach at Penn State. Now, Penn State's a program for the by and large, I have an appreciation for. Obviously, there's components of their more recent history that you can't touch with a stick, and they're wretched and terrible. But on the field, rebuilding a program after that has to be one of the hardest jobs that you could undertake. And Bill O'Brien, I think, acquitted himself very, very well in the couple of years that he was there. I think I've mentioned this either on a Zoom or on a call or somewhere else, but it was several years ago. HBO did sort of a rolling feature on, and it was a number of coaches, number of programs, whatever it was. But they did a couple of shows on Bill O'Brien at Penn State. And I just found him to be really, really likable, really, really impressive. Now, likable in the way that head coaches are sort of grouchy anyways, right? So he's not going to be your neighbor, but, I think he could be a hell of a football coach. And he is. And so I think that's phenomenal. And I think he had a great deal of success with Houston. What we're getting here is an NFL head coach to be our offensive coordinator, an NFL general manager. So I think when you transition NFL head coach, general manager to college offensive coordinator, there's a weight that sort of lifts off your shoulder. It's not that it's not an important job or a hard job or a lot of work to put in, but it's just the scale of it is just incredibly different. And so I think that like his bandwidth, his capacity to do more in the offensive coordinator role at Alabama, I think is significant. Maybe even to offload some duties from Coach Saban to make Saban's job easier, because we know we want that to be true as well. I do think, and so there's a little bit of a prediction here, a little bit of going out on a limb. I think Bill O'Brien may be the right person in the right time to bring about the multiple offense of Saban's dream. And so think about what the Patriots are known for. They have not a different game plan every week. They have a different offensive system every week. Now, it's NFL players. They have more practice time. I understand all of that. But what's the version of that that applies in college, where every week every team has to defend every blade of grass, the short passing game, the long passing game, the screen game, the running game, the power running game. I think Alabama offense, and we'll get into the offensive lineup, I think Alabama has the talent to be that versatile. And I think we have a coach that has the ability to sort of mine all of that, fold it into the Saban offense. It's still the Saban offense, but every year as we change coordinators, as we change coordinators, it's still the Saban offense, but it collects new wrinkles. And it's like a snowball as it gets bigger and as it continues to pick up new concepts and ideas from coaches. And so I think Bill O'Brien is going to bring a lot of concepts, a lot of acumen to the job. And I think he's going to be able to push and pull the bells and buttons and levers to bring about an offense that maybe as multiple as we've ever seen, and certainly look for action out of the slot, the use of the tight end, and sort of a short passing game. And again, we'll get into some of the players, but I know we've got some over the top speed and an incredibly talented and deep running back room too. So I think Bill O'Brien is going to be a mastermind with all the switches that he's going to have at his fingertips. So definitely, absolutely excited about that. All right, let's pick up the pace and move to next coach. Doug Marrone is replacing Kyle Flood as the offensive line coach. Now, Flood leaving with Sark, that's no surprise. Stevie Wonder saw that coming. They both came together as a package deal of sorts from the Falcons. And so the fact that they leave together, that's not a surprise at all. We should all know that. What's interesting is it's a little bit of a package deal with O'Brien and Marrone, in that they are both really, really good friends, both former NFL head coaches, which is by itself incredible. Their wives are best friends. I think they there's some backstory about how they met each other's wives, or not in a weird way, but just that their history goes back to their wives were friends or something, and I don't know, whatever it is. At any rate, what's incredible is Marrone's experience. He's a two-time NFL head coach, a former college head coach, and he came up through the ranks as an offensive line coach. And so as sort of thought-provoking as it may be to say that Bill O'Brien, head coach, GM at the NFL level, came to be offensive coordinator, I think it's even more intriguing that Marrone went from head coach in the NFL to offensive line coach at Alabama. I hesitate to call that a step down because, you know, I kind of like our program, but in sort of the landscape of coaching opportunities, NFL head coach is, I would say, a couple of rungs up between a line coach anywhere. And so that's amazing. It really speaks to a couple of things. Definitely Marrone has grown up as an offensive line coach. And so he's definitely got skills and talent there that he brings to bear. I think he's sort of an old school coach in that regard. And so I think he's going to do really well coaching the offensive line at Alabama. I think it speaks insanely to Saban's aptitude and just really aggressiveness in going after replacement coaches. I mean, if you count Saban himself, we've got three former NFL head coaches on this coaching staff. We're inventing ways to be amazing. Just when you thought you'd seen it all, look what we got over here. And we think about recruiting, and especially some of the top end players that want to go to the NFL. Set Saban aside, right? He's an NFL coach, so there's three of them. But two with prolonged tenures in the NFL and prolonged tenures as head coaches in the NFL. I think it's amazing. I do think Marrone, and I sort of get this from some of the reading, that he may be potentially more of an introvert. And hey, I am too. So that's great. And so I look at that from the framework of, introvert, extrovert is where you draw energy versus burn energy. And so think of somebody getting on a stage, and if they're an extrovert, then they draw energy from the crowd. That is motivating and exciting and energizing for them to be speaking to a large crowd. An introvert is just the opposite. They can speak very well and do a phenomenal job. It just drains their energy. It just burns their energy. And so they need to, instead of getting a high from it, they get a low from it. And they both can be dynamic speakers. And so I think Barone, with, you know, probably more of an introvert, is the head coaching job and the interviews and the press conferences and all that are just draining. But where are, can you be more anonymous than an offensive line coach? And so I think that has to be invigorating for him. And so I think that raises his water and raises his energy levels. And so I look forward to, he's got to be so excited. And plus with the talent that we have across the offensive front, and we'll talk about that. So I'm excited for what he's going to bring to the offensive line position. All right, moving on to tight end and special teams. Drew Savoda replacing Jeff Banks. I think Jeff Banks is sort of represents sort of the pivot point where the fan base started to say, "Sark, cut this out." And I know I sort of had, you know, that thought as well, you know, that he was really getting after poaching the Alabama staff. I do think, though, Jeff Banks wasn't all that of a surprise that he left Alabama to go to Texas. If we think about it, he's from Texas. We got him not that long ago. I think he was at Alabama for 2 years. And he was a special teams tight end coach at Texas A&M. And he kind of had to leave Texas A&M. I think there was some fidelity. I don't know all the stories. I've just have heard a little bit. I think that there were some issues that it just made sense that he needed a change of venue. And so getting out of state for a couple of years, I think was probably the intent. And then, spend some time with Saban, take the shower, and then heading back to Texas, I don't think is altogether a surprise. I think that he did get a promotion. He did get a raise. It is a state with no income tax. And I think he's got family and roots in Texas. So it's not too much of a surprise that if he had the opportunity that he would take it. And he did. I think Sark went hard after Holloman Wiggins, and I think that's where that may have been the more egregious attempt to get. And I'm glad Wiggins hung around. Speaking of Drew Savoda, this is a younger coach, hasn't spent as many years at the collegiate level, but I think he's hungry, motivated, and is on a trajectory. He is a former, I won't say coach of the year, but certainly highly respected high school coach in the Houston area. And so that's got to help recruiting in the state of Texas. Rice gave him his first opportunity as coaching, a special teams coach there. And in Memphis State, the America Conference, whatever they're in, I think they tried to play a little bit in the spring. And so Drew had a little bit of sort of two seasons in one. And then we hired him, I think, sort of midseason from Memphis State. And he missed spring as an on-the-field coach, but he ramping up on the system. I think he's going to be a phenomenal recruiter. I imagine he probably stays at Alabama for nearly as long as Saban does to really, you know, get his bona fides as a coach at this level. And I want to throw in sort of tongue in cheek that, Drew's a proven head coach and a proven special teams coach. And so it's not like we're just bringing in a strength and condition coordinator to head up a special teams. So I think we're doing really well in that regard. I look forward to Drew being an asset in recruiting and certainly coaching as well. Let's take a look at running back coach. And, you know, between the running back coach and we'll get to Jay, you know, the corners coach, these two and maybe Drew a little bit, just all of them in their own way, just there's just a wrinkle to what Saban is doing and bringing the coaches. It's not perfunctory. You know, we need a running back coach, go get one. We need a cornerback coach, just go get one. That he is, you know, hand selecting the right individual for the job. And so Robert Gillespie is taking over for Charles Huff, who left to go to the Vikings. And no, I'm sorry. That's Carl Scott. Charles Huff, Now, this is amazing. We talk about Saban's pipeline. Charles Huff took a running back job, a running back coach job, and spun it into a head coaching job. That's pretty impressive. That's getting all the accolades from being on Saban's staff. And so, again, that just demonstrates that the pipeline is healthy. Guys see that and say, gosh, I can be promoted to a head coaching job from any position on Saban's roster just about. And so I'm going to jump on board there and help the program. Let's be successful. And then I'm going to be successful as a result of that. And so congrats to Charles Huff, his contribution and then the success that he's had and spun out and the health that shows to the Saban tree and the Saban pipeline and network. But Robert Gillespie, let's focus on Robert for a little bit. I think he's an outstanding pickup. Many will remember his name, especially if you're my age. You'll remember that he was a former running back for the Florida Gators during the Steve Spurrier, just sort of during that era. And he has really developed himself into a respected coach and recruiter. And I think he really sort of fits the Saban mold, a hard worker, a quality coach, and gets after the recruiting as well. He has mentored, Gillespie has, multiple 1,000-yard rushers at North Carolina, and he coached there under Mac Brown. What's interesting, and this is just one of those things that sort of catches my eye, and so I call it out. But if you'll remember, when Sark left, there was a lot of sort of hoorah, who is going to replace him as offensive coordinator? And one of the names that made at least the media shortlists was Phil Longo. And Phil Longo remains the offensive coordinator where? At University of North Carolina. And so to the extent that, hey, there's really some interesting things that Phil does that would mesh well with Saban's offense and would mesh well with what we want to do at Alabama. And that makes him a really good candidate. All of that is true. If you have the opportunity to go get a Bill O'Brien, you do. But if there's enough of sort of a wrinkle that says, but that Longo decision, there was something there. So what do? You go get one of them. And so going to get Robert Gillespie is not getting Phil Longo, but it's getting sort of an introduction to maybe what are some of the schemes, maybe what are some of the things that we really liked about what North Carolina does. And interestingly, it was a lot of screens. And you think, well, we don't need Longo to get their screens. Let's go get their running back coach because he's the one coaching those players up. And so I thought that was of particular interest. I am really bullish with Gillespie that Brian Robinson is going to have a big year. And I think some of the youngsters, Jace and Kamara, again, we'll get into talking about the offense. But I think those guys are really going to do well under Robert Gillespie. So we look forward to that. And in the former, the final sort of head coach transition, Jay, and I should have done a pronunciation on this, so you guys are going to butcher me for this, but Vallea, I do believe, is the pronunciation. So Jay Vallea is replacing Carl Scott. Carl Scott is the one that went on to be defensive back coach with the Vikings. And Jay is coming in and taking over specifically the corners coach. Now, Jay is another coach that I am super excited about. I think individually, I was as excited about Jay as any other individual coach. I love sort of the Marone and Bill O'Brien, two NFL coaches, but that's sort of a collective there. Jay is one of the coaches that singularly, individually, really excited about this guy. I think he is a young coach on the move. He had, and within the span of a month, this is crazy, within the span of a month, he was a defensive backs coach at Texas, at Houston, at Philly, and then Alabama. And that sounds crazy. So let's break that down a little bit. Well, he was with Texas under Todd Herman. And so when the regime change took place there, then he was out of a job. And so that's what happened there. And as any young coach in a career that can be very challenging, I think he jumped at the first opportunity that was offered to him. And so when Houston said, "We'll pay you to coach here," I think a young guy looking for work, I just lost my job, looking for work, I think he jumped at the first at the first paycheck that came available. And I think a lot of us would do that in that situation. So I that makes sense to me. He immediately wanted to get back to work. And I think that's great. I think Philly, the Eagles, so an NFL team, they came and said, we actually want you to be a secondary coach with us. And I think Jay probably looked at that and said, well, that's a step up. And so, which, you know, we would all say that, but, I think he said, I'm going to leap at this bigger opportunity, in the NFL because I am career track oriented. And I think that's, I think, you know, again, I'm calling him a young coach on the move. And so he saw that opportunity and he leapt at it. And he was there not quite 2 weeks and Saban comes calling. And so you look at a guy that's like, I want to be upward mobile in my career. I want a place where I can maximize my growth, development opportunity. I can build a resume to build my career and it's stable. Well, Alabama's pretty good at that, right? Especially right now under Saban. And so I think that Alabama represented, especially if he wanted to be in the collegiate ranks, Alabama represented a better opportunity than Philly did. And so here he comes to Tuscaloosa. Again, he's a highly successful individual. He was a team captain when he played at Wisconsin not all that many years ago. He probably had an opportunity to play professional when that sort of fizzled out. He became a trainer, was a business owner, and he, I want to say in the Texas area, but he started training high school athletes, a couple of professional athletes, and so he was getting after it there as a business owner. After a while, he recognized he wanted to get back into coaching, and at one point, he was the defensive quality control guy at Georgia, and guess what? He was at Georgia during the 2017 season, when we beat Georgia for the national title. And so again, not that long ago, he was a quality control coach, and now he's an on the field coach at Alabama. There was footage, and I can't remember the program, but there was footage of him coaching, and it was just a clip, but a footage of him coaching his cornerbacks at this program, and he was very hands-on and very audible and coaching the players through, and they were doing a drill and he said, you know, play the man, then the ball, play the man, you know, then the ball. You want to know the guy that you're covering. You want to know, you know, don't look for the ball because you just get spun out by, you know, a play faker or something. And so guard your man. And then, you know, look to the ball. And so that was sort of that was the mantra that he was drilling on. And he said it multiple times in just a 15-second, 20-second video. And at one point, you know, he's talking to the player, you know, what do we do? And the player just man then ball. And so that resonated with me that he's an active coach, active communicating with his players. And that he's drilling these fundamentals home, because just at the drop of the hat, the player was quoting it back to him, which I thought was phenomenal. I think that I think Jay likely stays at Alabama a couple of years. I think a minimum of 3 years. And here's my thought process. Clearly, he's upward mobile, and I think he's going to get opportunities. I think what he wants to do is he at this point he probably wants to put some longevity on his resume. That would be my speculation. I think especially if his interest is in the collegiate game, then he wants to get a couple of reps in the recruiting cycle. And if he recruits as well as I probably think that he will, and he does that with sort of the script A on his shirt when he's talking to recruits, then he's going to be a good recruiter. And you get a reputation for being a good recruiter. How? By being a good recruiter. And so if he's a good coach on the field, gets a couple years of stability, gets a couple quality reps through the recruiting cycle, then he is embellishing his future opportunity while he's coaching at Alabama. And so I think he's probably here. I don't know how long, none of us do, but I think Jay is probably here a couple of 3 years. And I would look for him to, in the not too distant future, to be a defensive coordinator. I'm not predicting that's going to happen at Alabama, but I think that is the direction that he's going. And I think he's going to get there I think pretty quick with what we're seeing from him already. All right, so that was a rundown of the Alabama coaches. Probably ran a little bit longer than I was thinking, but that's all right. We've got a full write-up we just talked about at the podcast on the website, alabamafootballpodcast.com, and check out Bama Insider. And so I made a special note. I always say, oh, I read something, I wish I'd written it down. I wrote it down. Bama Insider, they did a breakdown of the entire coaching staff, so all of the guys, including Saban. And I thought it was pretty insightful, especially for some of the new guys, part of my sort of prep and research there. But I had some interesting things about several of the coaches. So I'd strongly encourage you to check out the content there at Bama Hammer. It's a mix of a sort of a video, audio, and then they've got an article there that you can read. Coming up, we've got offense and defense previews. We'll throw in a little bit of a special team talk as well. Check out the member program. We've talked about that. We've tried to make it as absolutely simple, not a bunch of tiers, not a lot of sort of jump through hoops, sort of qualifying stuff. Look, it's just cut and dried. Help us keep the lights on over here. And we greatly appreciate it. And we'll get you some bonus content in the free shows. And then just the gratitude and appreciation of you supporting the program. We're going to do the Zoom calls again, which was phenomenal. I've told folks that if I stop doing the podcast, I'm still doing the Zoom calls because they're just so damn fun. And it was a great group that we got together last year and did that. So join us over there. And we are going to still do the ticket raffle. And so, you know, a couple of bucks a month supporting the podcast that hopefully you enjoy, getting some camaraderie on the Zoom call and a chance to come with us to a game. It seems like a pretty good upside. So if there's any questions, don't hesitate to reach out. AlabamaFootballPodcast.com is the web. AlabamaFootballPodcast@gmail.com. I answer every one of those that's not a solicitation for SEO services. And we'll kind of go from there. With that, roll tide. Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a roll tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the tide. Got that, coach?
Aye.
Of course. Roll tide.